Doesn't that computer know who you
don't
are?
Don't they have any idea?
Bow down to the Tech Talk host.
That's right. That's right.
Behold the glory that is me.
A little while ago, I was installing some software, and I ran across this exact same
thing. I find you pompous, judgmental, and completely self-absorbed. Would you be my friend?
A Windows Vista machine.
You would think.
You'd think there'd be no problem.
How could there be a problem with that?
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Directory permissions with config.msi directory, blah, 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 blah.
This is Tech Talk.
Good morning. This is Tech Talk. You have Michael Tech Talk Castle on WRLR 98.3 FM, and we got a great show set up for you today. Today we are going to have our good friend Jay Garman on. Now he's going to talk about, of course, last week's geek trivia question. In case you forgot what that one was all about Java, and a little bit of news, little updates on that kind of good stuff, and of course, then at the end of the, guess what? We are definitely, I'm making time this week, since it's been a couple of weeks. Making time this week to hit our cool sites of the week, and I got a number of them. I got a bunch of them saved up, so you don't want to turn away and lose out on that. Of course, if you miss anything, I should tell you, you can always go to facebook.com/techtalkwrlr, or you can go to our main podcast page as well. I've actually got a new little shortcut, makes it easier to get there. bit.ly/techtalkwrlr. You can find it there too. So, and of course, send us emails, techtalk@wrlr.fm. There's so many ways to get a hold of us. I don't even know where to start. 847-984-0847. You can leave messages there too. Write all that down right now. Hopefully you're not driving. Hopefully you're getting, if you are driving, you're going someplace nice. This is, of course, Memorial Day weekend. So shouts out to all the soldiers and people that have protected us and protected our freedoms over the many, many years. And also too, of course, looking forward to some good barbecue and a little bit of fun this weekend. I think it's supposed to be cold up here in the Midwest, unfortunately, but that just means more time hanging out inside on our computers, which is where we want to be anyways, right? I'm going to jump right in, as I said, into news and views and all sorts of good stuff going on. Now we've got a few things happening right now that I think are pretty interesting. Google Maps just came out with a really different look and feel to it. They've got a beta out on this. You can sign up for it. I was one of the lucky ones who actually got selected and was able to take part in this beta rollout of the new Google Maps. I think personally, I like it. It's the only downside to it is that it's slow right now. There's a lot more emphasis on the imagery, the graphics, the look and feel, the GUI, you know, the graphical user interface, a little bit cleaner, but and it's also easier to figure out how to add different layers and things to it, but for whatever reason, it is a bit slow right now. I think the servers maybe aren't quite geared up for it, or they're not they're possibly not compressing some of the imagery as effectively or efficiently as they had in the past. Now, I haven't read about it and about if that slow down issue will be something that's going to carry on when it goes to alpha, or I mean when it goes to release state, but we'll see. And as we know with Google, of course, it takes sometimes years for things to come out of beta. I'm still mad at Google, of course, because of the Google Reader thing. If you haven't heard about that, if you're a big fan of Google Reader, as I am, you're going to want to make sure that you've looked at some way to migrate yourself off of Google Reader, because of course it's going away. July 1st is going to be the end, the death, the disappearance of Google Reader, and this has caused a lot of heartache for a lot of people, including myself. Google Reader, if you're not aware of it, has been around for a long time. It's a way that you can manage and grab RSS feeds off of websites and other news feed sources, including, in fact, of course, the Tech Talk blog, and get that in your webpage, on your mobile device, on your iPad, wherever it may be. There's a ton of ways to interpret and read and grab Google Reader feeds. And like I said, it's been around for so long. People have built, and myself included, have built applications and their lives to some degree around the ability to read news in this very, very efficient, very clean way, and it's all going away. So I've been trying some different ones. I've started to narrow it down between two. My two favorite replacements right now for Google Reader are Feedly and Pulse. I like Feedly a lot because it has somewhat of the same clean look that Google Reader does. It's got more emphasis on bringing up an image or two from the posts that you're reading, but you can flip through pretty quickly and still resolve it. It also, too, has a nice feature that you can actually bring your Google Reader feeds directly into it. That's Feedly. And I've been using it on my iPad mainly, and not so much, or I take that back. I've been using it on my Android phone primarily, not so much on my iPad. I can't speak to how it works for some of the tablet devices. For the tablet reader stuff, I've been doing Pulse. Now, Pulse has been around for quite some time as well, and I had been using it actually prior to the news and report of Google Reader disappearing. Pulse is great on the iPad. I use that quite extensively there. Now, they've just recently been talking about how you can actually import your Google Reader feeds into Pulse, too. I have not tried that. I will report back as soon as I get an option or the opportunity to do that, and we'll see how, how well that works. Of course, one of the main things that you need in any sort of a reader is, you know, it's good enough to get the information that you want, but then you also, too, want to be able to share it with the world, and both Pulse and Feedly do that quite well, and also allow you to kick articles that you want to read later off into Pocket, which is another one of my favorite applications. We can talk about that some other time. But so Google's undergoing Google Maps changes. I told you about that. They're killing Google Reader. It turns out, now, if you are a user of any of the other Google apps, you may have some other changes coming for you too. So the Google Hangouts has just been upgraded to integrate a little more seamlessly with Google Chat in your Gmail. They've also, too, got an iPad app, which I haven't had the opportunity to use, although I've installed it. It looks nice and clean and like it's going to work just fine. Now, Google Hangouts, if you're not aware, is a way that you can work with people that are Google contacts and instantly get into a video conference with them and web sharing on your Google Docs site and all sorts of fun stuff like that. It's really not a bad little application. Pretty cool. They're also looking to completely reformat their Gmail interface again. It feels like only a couple of months, but I guess it was a couple of years ago that they reformatted the Gmail interface last time. They're redoing it again. There's some pics on there. If you go to thenextweb.com, it's right on the front page right now. You'll be able to see some screenshots that were grabbed and snapped somewhere, somehow, that look like they're going to really kind of clean up that front page of the Gmail interface, not only on the web, but also too on your mobile device. So that'll be interesting to see how that all comes through. If you're a big Gmail fan, as am I, seeing how that changes and if it's as useful as, you know, the problem with these changes, and look, I'm not somebody who gets so stuck in their ways that I don't like change. I love change. The problem is, I guess I do get stuck enough in my ways that I am leery now of change coming, that it's not going to be as useful, that I've gotten used to one way of doing things that works for me. It's effective. I integrate it into my life, and then Google comes and pulls the rug out and does something completely differently. Now, if you're not a Google fan, if you're an Apple fan, guess what? You're going to have to deal with the same darn thing. Apple is saying they are, this is long time been waiting. They are going to revamp their entire operating system. The iOS 7 is going to be changed, and they're pulling away all of those kind of, they call it the skeuomorphism, which is the fake looking realistic stuff. You know, you look at the newsstand app and how it looks like a little bookcase, right? Or the yellow notepad, you know, and it looks like a real piece of paper. Now, some people really, really like that. Well, tough luck. It's all going away. They're pulling that out. Supposedly, iOS 7 is going to be black, white, and flat all over. I have a suspicion, so it's going to look a bit like... dare I say it, it's going to look a bit like the new Microsoft operating system, the Windows Windows 8 setup, and the way that they've got the bars and the squares and things like that. Maybe not. I guess we'll find out. Now, the senior designer is a guy named Joni Ive, who, you know, he's been around for a long time, and he's been in charge of a fair number of really positive changes for Apple and the iOS. So we'll see how this comes out, you know, and so we know that the representations of real life objects are going away, but changing everything to just black and white, clean minimalism, you know, that might not be a bad thing. I don't see why not. I use an iPad. I'm still not a big Apple fanboy, as if you listen to the show at all, you know. So for me, I don't have the same sort of angst about this as I do when we start talking about changing my Google interfaces. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. One last bit here on Google and Google Maps. I forgot to bring this into my conversation on Google Maps. So your tragedy occurred. Fortunately, it wasn't horrible. People were not killed, I guess, just a few injuries. But you probably heard about the I-5 bridge in Washington State, the Interstate 5, and how that collapsed shortly after a truck went over it, and supposedly his load hit the steel siding, and the thing crashed down, and it's gone. You can't cross. Interestingly, and this shows, I think, the value of the web and of Google and using Google Navigator and things like this. If you go on Google Maps right now and you try to create a route that would take you over the I-5 bridge, it will not. It has actually already been removed from Google Maps. Now, not the satellite view pictures, of course, but the actual navigation maps and so on. If you look in there, you will see that there is a break right there over that body of water, which is the Skagit River, and I that's amazing. I mean, it was so the bridge collapsed last Thursday evening. By Friday morning, Google Maps was already updated. Now, you may be asking, wow, they've got some great people at Google there really managing this kind of thing and being on top of it. And I guess this is an important enough news feature and change that they went right to. And that's not the case. That is actually not the case. The reality is that Google uses an army of volunteers. Did you know? You may not realize this. You can actually go in and update the map yourself. If you're aware of somehow that Google Maps is wrong and incorrect, they've got wrong information, or there's a route that doesn't actually exist and they keep trying to send it on to you, you can go through and go and use the Google Map Maker and submit a change. Now, it'll be verified before it gets updated, but you can be one of the community members, kind of like a Wikipedia, but it's a Mapopedia, I guess, that you can go in and you can change this stuff yourself. Now, MapMaker has been around since 2008, so there's a large number of people that are already in and doing this kind of stuff. I've actually made a few minor changes myself in my area, and you can update the maps of the areas you know. You can improve the level of detail. You can add accuracy. You can make changes to addressing schemas and how those are sometimes reported incorrectly. So pretty cool way. Now, and it's interesting to note, too, that MapMaker is available, of course, on the internet. It's available worldwide and has allowed Google Maps to actually include accurate maps of North Korea. North Korea, of course, has been traditionally very, very not interested, let us say, in allowing map making or any other type of information to leave it. But with map maker, volunteers have gone in who know the areas and have been able to add map information about places like North Korea. So I find that very interesting. You know what we're going to do right now? We're going to break away from all this good stuff. I am very, very curious to hear about our geek trivia of the week. So I want to see if I can give Jay Garman a call. Now, we have had reports that some of our Skype calls have not been working too well. So we'll see how this works. We'll give it a try. This is always kind of, you know, a roll of the dice for us every week. So no different than any other week.
Hello.
Good morning, Jay. Can you hear us?
Absolutely.
Oh, fantastic. All right. We had reports of, believe it or not, on the tech show, we had reports of technical difficulties. Using Skype. It was the people before. It was those sports corner guys, though. Anytime I hear a problem from the sports corner guys, I figure that's either an ID10T issue or operator error. So
PEDCAC. Problem exists between keyboard and chair.
Exactly. Actually, to their credit, they did try all the right stuff. My suspicion it was actually on the other end of the phone that was a problem. So, but that's all right. We got through to you, or I should say I got through to you anyways. No Dave this week. He's off gallivanting around again as he so frequently does. So we'll get him back here next week.
Excellent.
Yeah, next week, of course, we're going to have on the... Or is that next week, or is that the week after? No, that's the... No, that is next week. Yeah, next week, we're going to have on Gene Wolfe, who is going to talk to us about Star Trek and the history of Star Trek. The Saturday Evening Post has got their lead article. If anybody actually reads anything like that anymore, their lead article is on the history of Star Trek and where it's gone and maybe where it's going to go. So I'm hoping to keep you online on air to keep us credible and to maybe keep a good accuracy check on the Saturday Evening Post for where they're going with that stuff.
Well, far be it for me to impugn the journalistic integrity of a pillar of the community like Saturday Evening Post, but I did find out that a lot of my work at Tech Republic on Star Trek has been used as reference sources on Wikipedia, which I find really bizarre.
I don't find that bizarre. I don't find that bizarre at all. I think that's quite reasonable. Where else can you go for some good hardcore legitimate information? But someone like yourself.
There are whole wiki communities built around it. Memory Alpha is where I would go, not me. Like, I appreciate that they went to me, but like, I would start with Memory Alpha or StarTrek.com. There's a lot of places you could go for authoritative Star Trek information that isn't just this dude named me.
Yeah, but the problem is, you know, places like that, the people that, in order to have something added to Wikipedia, unless you're doing it yourself for yourself, which they kind of frown on, you have to have a friend who will do that. And my guess is the other people just don't have. Well, that's why they've got Star Trek. There's not the critical mass of friends. Let me say that. Let me put it that way. There's not the critical mass of friends that they need in order to have contribution into Wikipedia.
I'm going to commend them to you to attend Dragon Con next year, and I think you'll find exactly how many Star Trek fans there are in the world, and the numbers are going to stagger you.
No, I know. This is true. I'm being facetious. Considering that that Star Trek lovers are probably one of, if we have a core audience, that's probably one of the core audiences we have. I certainly mean no disrespect. I just recently, in fact, have gotten into making updates and changes in Wikipedia myself. I don't know why. I just never really done it before. But there were some things I wanted to add, actually, to the WRLR webpage. So I went in and did that. It's surprisingly easy to make any change you want to on any topic that you feel that you may have.
You say that, and I've added edited a number of pages in my time, and at least 60% of what I've done has been edited back out later after I put it in. So clearly the editors of Wikipedia and I aren't on the same page.
Ooh, wow, wow. Yeah, well, well either that or maybe the difference is that you're editing pages that people actually care about, and I'm in there.
There may be some truth to that. Yeah,
working on stuff that's not quite as important. Oh, man. Speaking of stuff that is important, though, I thought this was cool. I waited to talk about this until we had you on, but 3D printing is not just something that people are doing to make guns and fix broken toys, but actually saving lives. And I saw that you had posted about it on Facebook, and I just a fascinating story about this. I don't know if you probably know more than I do about exactly what happened, but I know there was something done recently with this.
Yeah, so and I'm going to forget where it was exactly, but the issue in question was that a young child had been born with a fairly extreme case of a certain bronchial condition where basically his larynx and the whole connection between the lungs and his throat just didn't have enough muscle tone to keep itself open, so that the poor child would just constantly go into pulmonary arrest because the airway would just collapse. You know, like being resuscitated from lack of breathing on a weekly basis. Mm. I forget the name of the condition. The condition itself was not terribly rare, but this instance of it was very extreme. Most kids grow out of it by the time they're two or three, but they didn't really, you know if this kid was going to make it. And what the doctors did was they basically got a 3D printer, one of the inkjet type 3D printers that lays down sort of extruded layers in an inkjet style, as opposed to like a band of plastic style. And they used this biodegradable surgical plastic that over years gets absorbed into the body and breaks down naturally. And they took a 3D image of the kid's airway and built a hollow, soft, biodegradable plastic splint that would fit on the inside of his airway, and surgically implanted that so his airway could stay open. But this is a pliant sort of squishy plastic, so you know it can open and close with muscle tone and all that sort of thing. And over the next 2 years, it will dissolve, but in that time, it will support the airway until the kid grows enough that the muscles are strong enough to keep the airway open by itself. So they literally built a new airway for this kid using a 3D printer matched perfectly to him, and he has not had any pulmonary arrest since it was implanted a couple of months ago.
Yep, which is just, I mean, the whole thing is amazing. This actually happened at University of Michigan is where it was, so it's fairly near here, it's just so cool and such a great use of a relatively new technology to do something amazing. The material, that PCL, which stands for something long polymer something or other, is actually, I found it interesting, was actually it's a compound that's found in heated milk fat. So it's truly like it is a biochemical and a bioplastic, and like you said, it degrades, and that's used as the as the base for what they do when they create it. The other part that I found interesting though too is that this usage of 3D printed organs and 3D printed biomaterial is illegal. This is actually completely illegal in the U.S. right now, thanks to the oversight and aegis of the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. The wonderful FDA would not approve this in most places, but they actually got lucky in that the University of Michigan has very, very close relationships and ties for some reason with the federal regulators, and so they were able to obtain an emergency exemption to allow this to happen.
Yeah, I understand sort of the prescriptive nature of regulation. Like, you don't want people just willy-nilly out there selling snake oil that they 3D printed or doing anything untested. The issue with 3D printing, because it pushes so many envelopes, is you can't have Like, there isn't, you're not making a medical device, like a lot of 200 that you can go into, like a class trial. Each of these things are unique. So it's like you have to basically verify the technique. It's almost a surgical technique as opposed to a product, or it's a hybrid of the two. So it really, the FDA is not set up for this kind of medical technology. I know there were similar issues recently, like there's been two or three cases where people have had severe fractures in their skulls. Which what is interesting about skull fractures is the bones don't necessarily move when they're fractured, but at least with my understanding, is they will necrotize, meaning if you got a complete section of skull somewhere where it's cracked all the way around, that missing section may necrotize and not match back up, and so that section will need to be removed and replaced.
Yep.
And so 3D printing of certain bioplastics is perfect for this because you can take a very good image of that whole section, 3D print an exact replica, and remove the necrotizing section and put the replacement in, and it will fit perfectly.
Yep.
And you can do it with these rejection materials and all sort of things, and that's really interesting, but like you're not made, it's not a standard piece of, like, the Michael Kastler broken skull section is not going to be mass produced where you can just like do multiple implantation trials of that object and design. It's unique to you.
And here I've been striving for so long to get into people's heads. That would have been my one chance, and now you're telling me that's not going to happen. It was an interesting note at the bottom of one article that I read where they were talking about how this type of technology, too, there's already a lot of potential uses that they're considering, particularly for, like, facial reconstructions. A lot of the softer tissues and cartilage, like in your nose and things like this, it's difficult for them to do exactly what this does, which is to replace the part that you're missing long enough for your own body to kind of take over the process. And if given that structure and given the architecture that it needs to build cells around it, your body's pretty darn good at taking care of that and doing it. But this kind of fills that gap.
Yeah. I think there's a whole new line of sort of surgical reconstruction that's going to be possible with this kind of technology, especially if we get the CAD software better. I have friends at the local makerspace here, and I talk to a lot of people on 3D printing on a somewhat regular basis. And the main issue, like the main thing that's stopping this from taking off, because 3D printers in and of themselves are becoming very affordable. You can get an entry-level model of a 3D printer for around $500.
Oh, has it gone that low?
It's
going
to be very, very
now.
Twitchy, and wow. The plastic that goes into it isn't the cheapest stuff in the world. But for $500, you can get a 3D printer. The issue is going to be the learning curve for the development software of the stuff you're going to have it print is very high.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny you mentioned that because I remember back in the day. Now I used to I'm really going back here. I actually for a while worked for an engineering and construction firm where I did use Intigraph and AutoCAD. I think it was AutoCAD like 11 or 12 at the time, so dating myself, and was doing some basic 2D designs. And recall exactly how difficult that was with the little training that I had to put together something that was reasonable. I can just imagine that being, increased multifold, doing a 3D diagram, 3D drafting, and actually to be accurate enough that you can create something that's usable. Even these simple toy parts and things that people are using to replace with the 3D printers.
Well, and talking to the guys that I know at the local level one, LVL1.org, that's the Louisville Makerspace. I'll give a shout out to them because they're awesome. And they came to Conglomeration and did some great demos. But the great recent advance in 3D printing, relatively recent, that's made everyone's lives easier, is when you print these like plastic objects, you don't want to make them solid plastic because A, that's really heavy, and B, that's really expensive. So what you do is the interior is a honeycomb structure, which gives it some structural integrity, but it's mostly air. And the software now, will let you, you know, once you had your basic CAD structure laid out, will interpolate and put in the honeycomb structure for you within the 3D space, and you can dictate how dense you want the honeycomb or not based on how, you know, strong you want it to be and that sort of stuff. And so, like, but that was the big advance. Like, it will automatically populate the interior space with the honeycomb design. Like, that's at the level we're at right now.
Okay, okay. Yeah, yeah, that's, they really are laying down the groundwork for stuff. You know, it's going to be amazing in 5 years where this is going to be at. And, of course, I mean, there's already, you know, frustration and confusion and dealing with, I mean, this is a good example with a, you know, a child's life and the balance, literally, and having to make your way through the rigmarole of the FDA legislations. But of course, you know, gun control is going to be a concern, you know, and things like that. But copyright application and rules are going to be tough. You know, how far does copyright extend and all that, I think is going to be a big issue.
Yeah, and I really don't have any good answers on that. It's really sort of the golden rule of any sort of intellectual property defense is that you can defend an expression but not an idea, which is to say, it's reasonable to have a copyright and a trademark on Superman, but it's not reasonable to have a copyright and a trademark on an alien who was sent to Earth from a dying world and was raised by farmers.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that general idea is indefensible, but if his name is Clark Kent and he wears a blue suit with a red S and a cape and he has heat vision and he cut the plant, you know, like, when you start getting into specifics, that's defensible. And there's this fuzzy line where it's specific enough to be defensible.
Yep.
And but the issue with, like, 3D printing is we're reproducing precise expressions. I want an exact copy of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and of course the other problem is going to be similar to what we've been struggling with for several years now with music copyrights and video copyrights and things like this is, hey, once that's out there, once that CAD drawing's done and you've got it out on the interwebs, it's really tough to pull it back. And, you know, and who's going to police that? and I know, you know, reading, having read enough sci-fi novels and so on, you know, creating 3D printers that have to check in with some centralized system and database, and that's how you, you know, pull and print. And yeah, those are all possible, but I find it very unlikely that that's the direction things will go.
Well, you can just ask the music industry how well that works.
Yeah, exactly. Any sort of management routine that was put in like that would be hacked and dismantled probably within minutes of actual release. So,
possibly by people who actually developed the management system itself.
Yes.
Like, my day job is developing copyright protections. My hobby is breaking copyright protections.
Exactly, exactly. Oh man. Well, and you know, and there's a fair number of things like that that are happening. Oh gosh darn, I just had it on the tip of my tongue. I was going to ask you about something else specific too, and of course I you know, I've lost it. But that's all right. That's all right. You know, to fill the gap of my my lack of mental acuity here this morning. Let's talk about the trivia question from last week, which was to some degree about a change in usage of current technologies and copyright and all that other great stuff. We're talking about Java, of course, which isn't copyrighted, but which is trademarked anyways, and that was originally used. First, you got to tell me it was originally used for a piece of hardware. It was a hardware design stuff, and then what exactly that was?
Yeah, so Java was not intended to be a software or for web development. It was intended for embedded hardware systems. Basically, everyone at Sun Microsystems had been coding in C++ like the whole world did up until the early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And but their issue with C++, and there was a bunch of them, it doesn't have native memory or memory management or garbage collection. It's extremely complicated, so it's hard to debug. And they wanted, in hardware is all about reliability. Like, when you turn your TV on, it always turns on. It doesn't 20 90% of the time blue screen. That's not acceptable in hardware.
Yep.
So the whole point of Java was this operating system, this software development system, that they could use for interactive hardware devices as an embedded code base. And to prove that, sort of the proof of concept, the prototype that they demonstrated was this device called the Star 7, which was nicknamed after the code that you punched into the Sun Microsystems PBX phone system to remotely control another handset somewhere in the building. So you do Star 7 and then an extension number, and you could basically remotely control another phone. So Star 7 was a nickname for anything that was a remote control. So the first use of Java was in this, and you should go look up Star 7 PDA prototype on YouTube, and you will see a video of James Gosling, the inventor of Java, showing the Star 7 hardware prototype, which is a prototype home entertainment system remote control about the size of a lunchbox. It is huge, but it is an LCD, 6-inch screen television screen that they've retrofitted to be a touch screen, and they've wedged onto it this huge battery pack and a cell phone transceiver antenna and an IRI and two Game Boy speakers, and they've made this interactive remote control. And when you boot it up, it has a flash animation or flash style animation boot up screen, which shows you how the touch screen works, with these big cartoony fingers running over the whole globe of the Earth and a cartoony version of the Sun logo. And it's got this whole sort of Sunday morning comics background system of images that you navigate through to run different parts of your entertainment system in your house. So it's got this picture of a house, and you could touch the living room in the house, and it will bring up all the entertainment equipment, and you touch the TV, and it brings up the TV, so it's got like brightness and volume controls, and then a scroll bar of network icons, so you touch the NBC Peacock, and the TV would go to NBC.
Excellent. I mean, you know, of course, Logitech has made that a little bit smaller now, but
in the last 20 years.
Yeah.
So it was really ahead of its time.
Yeah.
But and you can sort of, when you see how this works, you can see how Java can very easily be adapted to all the stuff it's used for on the web. But it's just sort of wild to think, like, this is what they intended, was to make really, really fancy remote controls. And you can tell from the demo, the intention was that they were starting with remote controls for TVs and VCRs. And it was really hilarious because it had an interactive channel guide, but to get to it, you clicked on an icon that was a little TV guide magazine.
Oh, nice.
Which is so foreign to us today. Like, I'm not even sure that's still printed.
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. I bet it is. I bet it is. I know I've seen some local TV guide things in my my paper. So I bet they still print that if you wanted it. Wow. That is really interesting, though. I can definitely see that, and that being a compelling application, particularly at that time, because that was when more and more of our home entertainment equipment was starting to have these remote control capabilities, and they were getting more complicated, and audiophiles and cinephiles were starting to add more components to their systems that made it more and more difficult for anybody else to run. I have that problem still now in our house, and I've got a Logitech remote, which I love, and I don't know why this is. No matter how many times I show, my mom or my wife, it's like there's literally one button to push. They still get it wrong.
It's just the nature of the beast. And what's funny about the original Java prototype is it went so well at Sun, they said, we're going to spin this out into its own subsidiary company called First Person, and we're going to use this whole technology to go win in the hardware marketplace. And bear in mind, this prototype had like a whole Sun Spark Station like motherboard in it. Like, it was that over-engineered. And so they go and they try to win some contracts from like Time Warner and a few other cable companies to build interactive cable set-top boxes. And the problem with all the demos was, you've given the user too much control. We don't want to give them that many options. And they lost every contract. The company flopped. It got reincorporated back into Sun, and they were so disappointed that they open-sourced Java because they thought it was a total loss, and then it takes over the web.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you know, though, if they hadn't open-sourced it, it probably wouldn't have. It probably never would have done what it did. So it's a good thing all around for everybody that we had we had a failed remote control unit to thank for many, many, many of the things that we are able to do on the web. Of course, now HTML5 is coming through, and that'll I'm sure help everybody. And then Sun, of course, got purchased by Oracle, and it'll be interesting to see. You know, speaking of hardware, so Oracle is in a real season of acquisition. You know, it's been a few years since they bought Sun. They started moving into hardware. Now they're buying up telecom carriers and other companies, which makes you think maybe they're going to go back to that Star 7 root and and maybe start making PBXs. I don't know. I don't know what the plan is.
Yeah, I've never been able really clear on what, you know. And sometimes I think Sun just does stuff to tell the shareholders they're doing something. Like, I never know if there's a strategic plan or they just need to look busy.
Yes. Yeah, that. Well, and if Larry Ellison is your boss, I would think looking busy is probably an important part of your day right there. For sure.
I would completely agree.
So what should we be thinking about for next week?
Well, this is Memorial Day weekend. So I always got to do movie release trivia on Memorial Day weekend because it's a big movie release weekend. You know, there's always big action blockbuster tentpole movies released on Memorial Day. That goes back to Star Wars. And every year, you know, the box office grosses get bigger and bigger. So you can look this up. There are lists of the most successful box office weekends in Memorial Day history. And of the 50 most successful blockbuster movies ever released on Memorial Day weekend, only one has ever won a Best Picture Oscar.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, that's surprising.
So this is total popcorn movie season. What is the only big Memorial Day tentpole film that has ever won a Best Picture Oscar?
Wow. Oh, that's a great question. That's a great question. I'm just surprised that there's only one. I mean, really, because there's so much fanfare that goes out for those, you know, and excitement and whatever else, and to have only one that's won, I don't have the foggiest idea what it could be even. Wow. No, that's a great question. That's a great question. And it is Memorial Day weekend, and we'll just say again, you know, for people to remember that it's not just all about barbecues and motorcycles and whatever else it is that you do this time of year and fun, but to, you know, remember those people that fought and died for our country and for our freedoms, and that's really what it's about, and to at least take a moment to remember that is always a good thing, even if it is too darn cold to be outside this year and you wind up sitting inside playing on the computer.
Well, you know, your thoughts should be with those of the fallen, and you can still barbecue a hot dog no matter what the weather is in the name of the United States of America.
There you go. That's right. Everybody loves a hot dog. Everybody loves barbecue. So.
Well, maybe not vegans, but, you know, there's some people you just can't help.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, there's soy dogs. I've had a soy dog in my life, one. I would not care to do it.
Check that off the bucket list.
That's right. Would not care to do it again. It was honestly, it was a mistake. We purchased some hot dogs. I guess they were sitting right next to the soy dogs and got that by accident. Paid a pretty penny for them too. We saw once we once we had those. So
well, I have paid extra for the privilege of this.
exactly. Oh, you gotta try everything once. Well, Jay, speaking of Memorial Day weekend, I will let you go and enjoy yours. I've held you on long enough. I've already told you I'm gonna be leaning on you hard next week. So
Hey, I'll do my best. If it's good enough for Wikipedia, I guess it's good enough for the Saturday Evening Post.
It's certainly good enough for Tech Talk here. There's no doubt about that. And we'll appreciate it and appreciate the expertise next week as we did this week and every week. Of course, people can go find more about Jay at jaygarman.net. And thank you, sir. And have a great weekend.
You do the same, sir. See you next week.
Yep. Take care. Thanks, Jay. Bye. Jay Garman. Go to jaygarman.net. Lots more great stuff that he's constantly doing. He's also on air with other places and podcasts and so on. He does a great job with Sci-Fi Signal. He's kind of an irregular there. He's a regular here, but he's an irregular there. So you can check that out. You know what we got to do? Speaking of irregulars, we're actually going to do our duty this week and play a couple of spots and sequences and all that other good stuff that we're supposed to do every week in between spots on air. When you come back, because I know you will, you're not going to turn that dial. When you come back, we're going to have our cool sights of the week as promised. So don't go away. You're listening to WRLR on 98.3 LPFM, Raleigh Heights, Illinois. This is the Tech Talk Show. Stay tuned.
You're listening to 98.3 FM, WRLR LP, Round Lake Heights, Illinois.
In Washington today, the president's popularity continued its pace. The most recent poll taken by Blah Blah Magazine and Blah BC News shows Blah 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 Blah.
Looking for local news you can use?
With more on that, here's Blah Blah Blah.
Blah 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 Blah.
The Lake County Journal hits newsstands each Thursday, and it's filled with features, sports, news stories that cover your community. Daily updates can also be found at lakecountyjournal.com, where readers can view photo galleries, post comments, and read blogs. The Lake County Journal, your life connected.
The Round Lake Area Public Library launches its Summer Reading Club program at a special event on Saturday, June 1st from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. This year's Reading Club theme is Have Book, Will Travel, and will be open to all ages to participate. This family fun day will include a craft show of over 45 participants displaying their craftsmanship and artistic talents, heart health screening for all ages, and a special acrobatic performance at noon by the Jesse White Tumblers. This is a public event and is open to people from all over the greater Round Lake area. The library is located at 906 Hart Road in Round Lake. For more information, the number is 847-546-7060. For event details and updates, the website is www.rlalibrary.org. Arc Consulting Corporation in Round Lake Beach reminds parents, if your computer is online, never let your children surf the net without supervision. Use a browser that supports a password system. For current safety information on how to protect your children, talk to teachers, librarians, your local police, or get information from your internet service provider. This message from Arc Consulting Corporation in Round Lake Beach. They can be found online at arccorp.com or their number is 847-265-8694.
All right. Oh, there we go. All right, I'm waiting for our cue music to pop in. Here we go. Yes, you're listening to Tech Talk on WRLR, and boy, what are we doing again? What was the idea here? I think what we were gonna try to do. That's right. Boy, haven't heard that one in a while. We are going to do a little cool sights of the week. I've got, as always, quite a few really good ones for you. Let me bring those up right now. Now, you know, I got really into. I've been doing a bunch of presentations lately. I've been doing a lot of trying to do a little more simplistic presentation stuff where you've got, you know, really just clear imagery, great fonts, things like this. So I've run across a number of just great websites that you can use to fill out some of those pictures that you want. And it's all copyright and royalty free. And also, too, to fill out some of those fonts that you want. So the first one I got to tell you about here is Every Stock Photo. Go to everystockphoto.com. And it's royalty free photography. You can search on it with keywords that you're looking for. I recently did a presentation where the theme for my presentation was using goldfish. It sounds weird, but it actually worked quite nicely with the idea of organizational change. And I was able to find a lot of really great goldfish imagery on everystockphoto.com. Good stuff. Now, of course, you know, nothing trumps doing a Google image search, or at least it's tough to. But this way, you're sure that all of the images that you're using are copyright free and open to use. Now, there's another thing that I love to do, of course, is to go in and get access to fonts. I'm a big, anybody who listens to the show knows, it may sound crazy, but I'm a big fan of fonts, of course. So if you go to, I found a list of great font sites on smashingmagazine.com, which I'm going to throw out there as an addition, like an extra plus type of cool site of the week. Smashingmagazine.com is fantastic. One of the places that I go all the time for fonts, FontSquirrel.com, F-O-N-T, and then Squirrel, S-Q-U-I-R-R-E-L. Absolutely fabulous. You can just do a quick search in there and find fonts. You can sort them and organize them and drill down into them based upon the type of font that you're looking for, keywords in the font, pretty handcrafted and hand scripted fonts. I like those a lot, and I'm kind of into the grunge fonts a little bit lately too. Great website, just tons of high quality fonts, really good stuff to use. Another one that I ran across, which is really great, is and it doesn't have an extensive or huge collection, but it's got a lot of just extremely high quality fonts. So the ones that they do have that are very high quality is the League of Movable Type. And you go there, and it's just spelled just like it says, the League of Movable Type.com. Go check that out. Also, another one that has some great ones is called Lost Type. .com. Also very good collection of free fonts that you can use to throw in there and use however you want. Great stuff. So you know, like I said, doing some of those now, you know what? I'm not going to mention this next site. I've got it on the list, but I know that I've talked about it already. But check that out. Boy, you know, I'm just going to leave it at that, actually. I mean, that's just such a great way to go. And something fun to do this weekend is to put together some images with some new fonts, make up some invitations to your Memorial Day weekend parties and barbecues using some of those cool fonts. You'll have a lot of fun. I recommend if you're going to do some meat on the grill there, use that Cubano font. Looks great for those. You have been listening to Tech Talk on WRLR. Next week, we're going to have the Saturday Evening Post here to talk about Star Trek. So make sure and tune in for that. Always glad to have you here. Check us out, facebook.com/techtalkwrlr. Send us emails to techtalk@wrlr.fm, or just tune in and listen to us every week on wrlr.fm on 98.3 on your dial. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great week, everyone. I am going to leave you with the podcast only song of the week this week, as Blind, the full album version off of the Hercules and Love Affair artist and album. All right, have a great week.
Child I knew. stars could shine now, for they are closer than near. But they will not present my present. They will not present my present. Whoa. I wish the light could shine now, for it is closer. Because I feel blind.